This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're going to talk about the Supreme Court. Why do the communists use violence? We have Brandon Gill here. What's going on with China? All that and more coming up on I'm Right. Okay, let's have a discussion, shall we, about communists and their use of violence and threats of violence. Why is that always how it goes? Okay, but you know what? Put that in your back pocket for a moment. Let's talk about something good because it's going to lead us there. First of all, Supreme Court finally stepped in. They stepped in and they said, hey, Justice Boasberg, this commie justice in D.C., you can't just step in and rule the United States of America. Sorry, you're being removed from this. We're going to deport people from Trent. Okay, so we had to jump through 1,000 hoops in order to get the Supreme Court to finally put this judge in his place. And the Supreme Court ruled. And it should be noted, Senator Eric Schmidt says he was tipped off.
Judge Boasberg, over the weekend, it came out, he's not the emergency judge in D.C. He inserted himself in that role. He was on vacation. The case was filed at 2:30 in the morning. Somehow, he ended up with that case. He wasn't the emergency judge on duty. So I think this requires further investigation and legislation. He's the chief judge, and he inserted himself. That doesn't happen. The emergency judges, 100% of the time, get those cases. So he could have been tipped off that this was going to be filed. And while on vacation, he took the case. So again, this speaks to, I think, the very aggressive, unusual, and unprecedented measures that these activist judges are taking to insert themselves. Ultimately, they're not going to be right. The Supreme Court's going to slap them down.
Okay. Look, I'll be honest with you. Just you and me talking. I'm in an absolutely terrible, terrible mood today. So I am not going to go off on what it probably means for the country that it took like 3 months and a bunch of hoops to jump through in order to justify legally deporting a bunch of barbarians the Biden administration brought in. I'm not even going to go there right now. I'm going to focus on the Supreme Court because the vote today was interesting. You see, it was 5-4. And guess who voted against us again? Amy Coney Barrett. So just let's pause on this and let's dwell on this for a moment. A communist, Boasberg, he wears a judge's robes. He has very obviously, it's obvious to anybody paying attention at all, he has decided he's going to be the vanguard protecting the communist revolution from President Donald Trump. And so every chance he's gotten, he has assumed the mantle of leadership of the United States of America and stopped the lawful things Donald Trump was doing. Anybody who's a reasonable actor would look at this and say, it's got to be criminal. This is way over the top. This can't be done. And yet, Amy Coney Barrett sided against us. Why? Okay, well, let's talk about the why, shall we? Amy Coney Barrett, I don't know her personally, but I can't help but think back to something she said during the confirmation hearing. Remember when she said this about her family?
As I said when I was nominated to serve as a justice, I'm used to being in a group of 9, my family. Nothing is more important to me, and I'm very proud to have them behind me. The confirmation process and the work of serving on the court, if confirmed, requires sacrifices, particularly from my family. I chose to accept the nomination because I believe deeply in the rule of law and the place of the Supreme Court in our nation.
Okay. You probably don't have any problem with what she just said, and neither do I. She's a wife. She's a mother. Nothing more important than my family. Frankly, I'd be disappointed if she didn't feel that way. She feels that way. But this brings me back to a topic we opened up the segment with. The communist and his love of violence, his unending love of violence. We can look back on quote after quote after quote after quote of communist leaders saying violence is necessary. They've never once called for it to stop. In fact, they've repeatedly encouraged their followers, whatever country it takes hold in, to commit acts of violence. Revolution without end. Mao talking about all political power comes from the barrel of a gun. Violence, violence, violence. This is programmed into them. It's programmed into America's communists. I saw a poll this morning that said 55% of people on the left think, it's not a big deal if Donald Trump gets assassinated. Assaults, violence, murder, vandalism. Why? What is it about communists that this just becomes second nature to them? You've probably seen this. Maybe you've even experienced this in your life. Maybe you've been online or something like that, and you saw a Democrat, a leftist, say something along the lines of, somebody should post his address. Post his address. What's that? Post his address. Post her address. It's a call for violence. We don't have to mince words. That's what that is. It's a threat. It's a very obvious threat. Somebody put up where this guy lives so we can go threaten him, maybe even hurt him. Why is this second nature to them? Because it's a tactic, you see. It's planned. It's why representatives like Jayapal speak like this.
We might call this getting strike ready. I think of it as getting a strike ready or street ready. And part of that is understanding our own strength. And as we develop that strength, being able to assess our risk tolerance, because we know that risk tolerance increases as the severity of the situation increases and as our own understanding of what's happening increases. So overall, the more we understand what's effective, what the risks are, and who's ready to participate, the more impact we can have.
The strike-ready portion of that's getting all the publicity. You heard what she just said. That was a very, very academic, very proper way to say our strength is in the mob of rabid street animals we have at our disposal. And their willingness to be arrested, to be punished by the law, that will determine what our strength is. They don't have the office of the presidency. They don't have the Senate. They have don't have the House, but they do have a willingness to commit acts of violence, and their leaders encourage them to do so. People like this savage.
My name is Graysa Martinez Rosas. I am an immigrant. I am undocumented, unafraid, queer, and unashamed.
Could you even imagine if that animal came at you? Outside of your weight class. Anyway, back to Amy Coney Barrett. Back to the communists. Why are they so in love with violence? Why do they encourage it? Why do they commit violent acts wherever they can get away with it? Because of people like Amy Coney Barrett. Because it works on her. Here's what I believe. I believe Amy Coney Barrett is afraid. I believe she is a mother, a wife with a family she adores. And that's good. That's good for her. I want to be clear about that. That is good. But the communist doesn't see that and thinks to himself, wow, that's really good. The communist sees that and he sees an opportunity. So when Chuck Schumer is out there giving speeches, threatening justices with reaping the whirlwind, when an assassin flies from California with a gun ready to blow Brett Kavanaugh's head off, you may be mortified. I may be mortified, but American Democrats sit back and love it because they understand the threat of violence equals political power for them. Why does the Supreme Court keep getting wishy-washy? Why do people like Amy Coney Barrett seem not on our side? Because Amy Coney Barrett is afraid. She has been made to be afraid, as any parent is when they look at their children and think about all the bad things that will happen to them. What if Amy Coney Barrett votes against the communists? What might they do? Well, the communists have said and shown repeatedly over and over and over again, they will kill. They will hurt you. It's why it was such an incredibly big deal. Do you remember when the protests started happening in front of the Supreme Court justices' homes? That's blatantly against the law, by the way. It's against federal law. You're not allowed to intimidate the Supreme Court in order to make rulings. It's a federal law for a reason. They don't want the communists to be allowed to do that. So why did the Biden administration allow that to happen? Why? Because they knew full well that the threat of violence, feeling physically afraid for yourself, your husband, your wife, your children, your sister, your brother, your parents, is a benefit to them. It is something they can always keep in their back pocket and pull out when necessary. Now, they don't have any power, including the Supreme Court, but the power they do have, as you just heard from Jayapal, is the willingness to commit acts of violence on behalf of the revolution. And for weaklings like Amy Coney Barrett, the pressure is simply too much. So she has to sit at home at night. She knows what the right thing to do is. She has to sit at home at night when these ridiculous cases are laid on her desk. And she's not sitting there thinking about what is legal, what is lawful, what is constitutional. She's sitting there picturing her children and saying to herself, what might happen to them if I go astray? That's the kind of country we have now. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We have a huge show for you tonight, a gigantic show. Congressman Brandon Gill has been all over this stuff. We'll talk to him in just a moment. Before we get to him, you need to remain unafraid. Jock. Jock will get a stack in your body. Natural herbal supplements from Jock, a male vitality stack, a female vitality stack. You want to feel good, prepped, ready to go, strong and unafraid. You want to feel full of energy, clarity of the mind. Try some natural herbal supplements. Stop sticking needles in your arm. Stop ignoring the fact that you're out of energy at 3 p.m. and get a Chalk subscription. Chalk.com/JesseTV gets you a 17.76% discount. So go try it. We'll be back. Okay, so I wanted to touch on something that I teased it a little bit in the opening, but I just wanted to talk about something really quickly here. When it comes to deportations and things like that, and I say something repeatedly, and I know you hate it when I say it, but it's 100% true. If your interest, and I assume it is the same as mine, that's saving the country, right? Saving and preserving a wonderful country for our children and their children after them. For generations I will never meet, I want the same country that I've enjoyed. I'm assuming you probably agree with me on that, right? If we want to save the country long term, we must have a different Democrat Party. The Democrat Party must change. And that's hard for us to talk about and accept because we don't have any control over that. I'm not a Democrat, and I never will be. Unless you're one of the commies who hate watches, you're not a Democrat. You never will be. But there's a great example of this. Jasmine Crockett's out there talking about illegals. Here's what she said.
So I had to go around the country and educate people about what immigrants do for this country or the fact that we are a country of immigrants.
Right.
The fact is, ain't none of y'all trying to go and farm right now. Okay, so I'm lying. Raise your hand. You're not. We done picking cotton. We are. You can't pay us enough to find a plantation.
We done picking cotton. She represents the Democrat Party today quite well. Keep all the illegals here. And I mentioned in the opening, we are, what is the date today? April 8th? Yep, April 8th. April 8th. And we are still having to jump through this hoop and that hoop and this hoop and that hoop, and we're waiting on this ruling from the Supreme Court and that ruling. Why are we having to jump through so many hoops? Because after spending 4 years bringing as many rapists and murderers into your country as humanly possible, every single Democrat, from judges to media people to elected people, are trying to keep them here. It really doesn't matter how great Trump is or how great the Senate is or the House is or whatever. You can't survive long-term as a country, sharing a country with people like this. We can't deport them fast enough. goodness sakes, we have to bank on the Supreme Court stepping in and ruling to allow us to deport the Venezuelan prison gang Joe Biden flew into the country. Think about that for a moment. We have 20 million people to deport, and the worst, absolute worst, the tiniest little sliver of that, we are having to jump through endless hoops and contort ourselves to get them out. We haven't even started with the other people. Cannot save a country unless Democrats change. It's what weighs so heavy on my heart, because I don't control them. You don't control them. We can't fix it. You cannot share a home with somebody trying to burn it down. It doesn't work. You may stop them once, twice. You may stop them for a month, maybe a year. Eventually, your home's going to go up in flames. You can't share a country with people like that. A reformed Democrat Party is a must, or we can't save the place. There. I said to share that with you. I know we were supposed to have Congressman Brendan Gill on the show. He flaked on us right before, so I just felt like we should do a little open borders interview, or open borders little rant. So how about that? All right. Let's talk about something else. Let's talk about expense reports. Shall we? Sucks, doesn't it? When you have to do your expenses, it's awful. Ramp knows that. Ramp came up with a credit card, you see, the Ramp corporate card. How much money, how much time do you spend on expenses? Well, do you have the receipt? I'm not really, what category is this one? Stop living like that. Ramp.com/Jesse is where you go and you get a Ramp corporate card. It does all that for you. Realize that? It does all that for you. You don't have to spend the time. You don't have to spend the money. You don't have to, we need a board meeting. No more of that. Ramp.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
With China, as you know, against my statement, they put a 34% tariff on above what their ridiculous tariffs were already. We're putting a 50% tariff on above the tariffs that we put on. We lose hundreds of billions of dollars a year on trade to China. It's just not going to happen. And hopefully we'll get along with China. If we do, that's great. And if we don't, that's okay, too.
Okay. He's dead serious about it. He's been serious about China for a long time. Let's talk to Gordon about it. Gordon Chang knows more about China than anybody I know, author of a book you should probably be reading called Plan Red. Okay, Gordon, Donald Trump has been hot on the Chinese issue for a long time, and he's been speaking lately a lot about how they're ripping us off. Can you give us more depth on that? What does that mean? How are they ripping us off? What are they doing?
They're running persistent merchandise trade surpluses against the U.S. So, for instance, last year, the merchandise trade surplus that China had was $295.4 billion. That was up something like 5.8% from 2023. And this is a result of predatory trade practices, but also criminal acts. So China's been stealing hundreds of billions of dollars of U.S. intellectual property each year, perhaps as much as $500 billion annually. And so, yes, President Trump is right. They've been ripping us off.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on stealing intellectual property? Because people don't understand how gigantic this issue is and how pervasive China is when it comes to it. It's like a national pastime over there.
Yes. Just to give you an example, DeepSeek, which is the Chinese open AI platform, they trained their large language model by ChatGPT-4. And by doing so, they violated OpenAI's terms of service. That's a U.S. company. And this has implications because DeepSeek looks like a Chinese government lab project, even though it's supposed to be a private company. The claims that they made for DeepSeek, which were intended to injure the United States, those claims appear to be false. But what they're trying to do is to destroy American business. And they do it very well. And they take intellectual property in so many different ways. But this is pervasive, and it's gone on over the course of decades.
Okay, Gordon, what's China's financial situation like? And I ask because it's clear, at least from their rhetoric over there, that they're not going to back off on this little trade war dust-up thing. They're going to engage. But their economy isn't exactly going gangbusters either, is it?
No. They reported 5.0% growth for 2024. That was an obvious exaggeration. It was probably about 1 or 1.5%. There's been an obvious deterioration between then and now. So China's probably around zero. But even if China were growing at 5.0, it would not be growing fast enough to pay back all the debt that China's accumulated, especially since 2008. And if you want to put this in simple terms, I think that China's experiencing its 2008 now. The reason why this is so critical for China is because Xi Jinping has turned his back on consumption as the fundamental basis of the Chinese economy, which means his only way out of a serious situation is to export more. And President Trump, with his tariffs that have gone into effect today and before, now has more than 100% tariff rate on Chinese goods. That means shutting off the U.S. market for many, if not most, of China's products.
Okay, Gordon, could you elaborate what that means for the American consumer? There are people understandably nervous right now, having a hard time making ends meet and thinking about the prospect of everything in their life getting more expensive.
Yeah, certainly it's going to get a little bit more expensive, but not to the extent that people think. So, for instance, in 2018, when Trump put his first round of elevated China tariffs in place, China picked up somewhere between 75 to 81% of the cost of those tariffs through various means, through weakening currency, through increased subsidies. So American consumers didn't feel that. Now, this time, China has more incentive to pay for Trump's tariffs. And they're starting to do that, again, by allowing the renminbi to go to lower levels, but also by increased subsidies to exporters to the U.S. Ultimately, you know, at 104 or 115% tariff level, American consumers will feel some of it. But we got to remember that tariffs at those levels redirect trade to other countries where the tariff rates aren't so high. So I don't think the American consumer is going to notice it. And in any event, it's not going to be substantial.
Okay, what other countries, and this is a completely loaded question, because China controls a lot of other countries.
What other countries what?
What other country, where's the trade going to go? Meaning, is it going to drive it into a country? Yeah.
Yeah, basically everywhere. So you're talking Bangladesh, Vietnam, maybe India, Mexico, a lot of other different places, Central America, especially if we trade, if we amend our trade agreement with the region. These are places where there's low cost of manufacturing and countries that are not nearly as hostile to the U.S. as China is. So if you were to go, let's say 15 years ago, and you were to go to a Walmart and look at where their apparel was made, it was almost all China. If you went there like about 5 to 7, maybe even 10 years ago, it was almost not at all China. And we're going to see the same thing for a lot of other products as these tariffs are put in place, which encourage countries to move their supply chains to different locations.
Okay, so countries like Vietnam, Vietnam's a communist country. China is a communist country. Vietnam has shown a willingness already to work with us. At least they've talked about that. But I would assume China's going to have some say-so in that.
Well, China will have some say-so because a lot of the new factories in Vietnam are actually Chinese-owned. But, you know, Vietnam, although it is a communist country, is quite friendly to the United States. And so Vietnam has its own issues with China, which are in many ways more serious than ours. So, in effect, Vietnam is a friend of the United States because we both have a common enemy. And when we all look at it, these other places are going to be much better for us, especially for countries that are close to us. So if we're talking about countries in our region, this is a win for the United States from many different perspectives, because not only do we get factories out of our enemy China, but we also put them in places where our supply chains are much shorter. And by the way, for people who are worried about climate change, that's a really good thing to have a factory in Mexico rather than on the other side of the Pacific.
Yeah, I'm not worried about climate change at all, though. All right, let's talk about militaries. Trump said this.
China has a massive surplus that they take and they spend on their military. Well, we don't want that. I don't want them to take $500, $600 billion a year and spend it on their military.
Gordon, yes. How strong is China's military? Not where it's going, but where is it? I know they put a lot of attack subs in the water. I know they're building up a navy. I know they're supposedly building up an amphibious force. Everyone thinks that's about Taiwan. I'm sure it probably is. But where are they compared to us?
China's military, even though, for instance, its navy is larger, and despite all the real problems in the American Navy and Air Force, their military is not nearly as capable as ours. But remember, if it's a war in Taiwan or the Philippines or Japan, they're a lot closer and their supply chains are a lot, supply lines are a lot shorter than ours. The problem that with the Chinese military, two of them. First of all, the Chinese military right now is fighting with itself. We see these purges and counter purges, and it appears that the enemies of Xi Jinping are purging Xi Jinping's loyalists at the top of the Chinese military, which means that that military is a mess. But even in the best of times, when they're not trying to kill each other, China's got a communist military, which means it's got two separate reporting lines, one political, one military. And the political one is more important, and that's no way to run a war. China will do very well in the first week of war because everything's been planned out. Nobody has any discretion. It all goes according to plan, more or less. But the problem for China is the second week of war when they are attacked, and because that type of military is not flexible and cannot make the decisions that are necessary to react to an attack.
Gordon, I know it's kind of a nerdy, wonky military detail, but it matters. What do we know about their officer corps? Are they capable, sharp? Is it? You make it sound like it sounds like a standard communist army where everyone's too afraid to put peanut butter on a cracker so no one can make a decision. What are they?
Well, they've been rehearsing a lot, as we've seen with these, for instance, exercises off Taiwan, which look like rehearsals for war. So they're very good at low-level provocations. But I don't think that they are ready right now to launch hostilities with an invasion of the main island of Taiwan. And there are a number of reasons for that. First of all, their officer corps at the top is not unified. But there's another reason, and that is if Xi Jinping were to launch a major operation, he'd have to give some general or admiral almost complete control over the Chinese military, which makes that flag officer the most powerful person in China. Even in the best of times, Xi Jinping is not willing to do that. And he's certainly not willing to do it now where the large portions of the military are opposed to him. So it's got a lot of tanks, it's got a lot of ships, a lot of planes. It's got some weapons that we don't have, like hypersonic cruise missiles. But the point is that the officer corps, I don't think, is ready to go to war. Remember, these guys have not gone to war since 1979. And in 1979, Vietnam, which we just talked about, Vietnam kicked China's first string military and humiliated it with Vietnam's third string. That shows you that China's not really that good.
Huh. Well, that's inspiring. Are they going to take Taiwan?
I don't think that they're going to launch an invasion with one of the main islands of Taiwan, but that doesn't mean the Chinese military won't be fighting in Taiwan. And the reason is that I think that there could very well be a low-level provocation in places such as the South China Sea that spiral out of control. I don't think Xi Jinping can control escalation. And once a war starts someplace, and it can be any place, it will spread throughout the entire region because America and its friends will all gang up, and China will then bring in Russia and North Korea. So we are going to have region-wide war if it starts someplace. Remember, Xi Jinping has configured his political system so that only the most belligerent answers are considered acceptable, which means they can't be able to deal with an incident. So that's the reason why I think it's a small provocation that spirals into a major war, not Xi Jinping waking up someday and saying, I'm invading Japan.
Gordon, we appreciate your wisdom as always. Thank you, sir. All right. Speaking of one event leading to another, are we going to invade Iran? I don't think so. Are we going to bomb it? I don't know. Let's talk to Lee Smith about that next. Before we talk to Lee Smith, let me talk to you about Peer Talk. We need to stop funding the people who hate us. And we need to stop assuming that that culture war has been won, because it has not been won. Not by a long shot, you see. We have to stop funding people who hate us, and Verizon hates your guts. AT&T hates you. T-Mobile hates you. Pure Talk loves you. Pure Talk is the patriotic cell phone company. Their CEO did two tours in Vietnam. They're so pro-America, they hire Americans. When you speak to them at Pure Talk, they speak English. It's glorious. Same network, too. You don't sacrifice service. It's easy to switch. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
We're having direct talks with Iran. Doing a deal would be preferable to doing the obvious. And the obvious is not something that I want to be involved with, or frankly, that Israel wants to be involved with if they can avoid it. So we're going to see if we can avoid it. But it's getting to be very dangerous territory. And hopefully those talks will be successful. And I think it would be in Iran's best interest if they are successful. We hope that's going to happen.
Well, it doesn't exactly take a member of Mensa to read between the lines on that. Joining me now, he probably is part of Mensa, Lee Smith, my friend, author, wonderful writer. Okay, Lee, apparently
not,
we're going to be sitting down.
Not a member of Mensa, but thank you. Yes, okay. Yeah.
Well, I figured there was a decent chance.
I'm barely
chance.
A member of anything. No one wants me in their clubs. Definitely not Mensa. Yeah.
Well, what's going on with Iran, Lee? Set the stage for me. What's happening here?
Well, I think the president has made it pretty clear that Iran's not going to have a bomb, and he says that he'd much prefer that Iran abandon its nuclear project through negotiations. But they're not going to have a bomb one way or another, and he's given them pretty clear options. Either Iran is going to wind up back in the Stone Age, he's going to bomb them so much, or they're going to give it up through negotiations. But I do not believe. I think again, Trump has been very clear. I don't think we're going to see fake negotiations or a fake deal like Barack Obama's fake nuclear deal in 2015. I don't think we're going to see anything like that. So I. He's been very clear, right? Not just about Iran, but North Korea. Nuclear weapons are bad. Nuclear weapons are very dangerous. We don't want this. What did he say when Biden warned the Israelis not to retaliate after a missile strike? When Biden said, yeah, don't hit their nuclear facilities, Trump was perplexed. He said, don't hit their nuclear facilities. That's exactly what you want to go after, right? So Trump is the president has been extremely straightforward here. There are two options going forward for Iran. Either they give up the program through negotiations or they lose it through something else.
Okay, before we get to how a war like that would shake out, can you help me understand as best you can, Lee, Iran's perspective on this, on why they wouldn't just make a deal, right? They're economically not in great shape. They're forced to work with countries like Russia, which are not as reliable. You know, Trump, because he's Trump, is going to sweeten the pot of this deal and make it financially beneficial. Why not just do it?
Because they want their nuclear weapons program. I mean, this has been an Iranian project for decades, so it's very important to them. Because the crucial thing to understand here is we talk a lot about Israel, we talk a lot about Saudi Arabia and Iran's enmity toward both of these powers, which happen to be U.S. allies. The big deal here since 1979 is Iran's project is to drive the United States out of the Persian Gulf. That's the big deal, right? It's not about Israel primarily. It's not about Saudi Arabia. It's about the United States, because the Persian Gulf is considered an American leg, right? The amount of energy that goes through that vital waterway. Now, I know that while we're not exactly energy independent, we are not tied down the way we were, say, 20 years ago by Persian Gulf energy. Nonetheless, it's extremely important. The president recognizes this, and that's not only why he's close to the government of Israel, but also the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Remember, this was his first foreign trip in 2017 during his first term. He realizes how important the Persian Gulf is to American prosperity and how important keeping stability in that part of the world is to American prosperity. So this is the major issue for the United States. And the reason that nuclear weapons program is so important for Iran is so that Iran has leverage to destabilize that part of the world. Iran can make these threats, and it's very different. Iranian terror groups, whether they're in Lebanon, whether they're in Gaza, whether in the West Bank, whether they're in Iraq, whether they're to the extent they still exist in Syria, it's very different when they're operating under a nuclear umbrella. So this is why the nuclear weapons program has been so important for the Islamic Republic for many decades. Now Donald Trump is saying, okay, enough. It's not going to happen. Nuclear weapons are bad all around, and they're especially bad in the hands of bad guys like you. Just to put it in a little bit more context, I think it's important to remember that this was the classic American position until Barack Obama, right? Not just about Iran. The United States has historically been against nuclear proliferation, whether it was with Israel, whether it was Taiwan, all these different powers, allied powers that wanted to have a nuclear weapons program, and the U.S. was against it. It was Barack Obama who said, well, let's make a deal with the Iranians over their nuclear weapons program that effectively legalizes their nuclear weapons program and puts it under the protection of an international agreement backed by the United States of America. So what Trump is doing here is not something radical. What Trump is doing is restoring American policy and American non-proliferation policy to the way it's always been until Barack Obama.
Lee, if these negotiations go poorly, and I mean, feel free to shoot me down on this, it seems obvious that they could easily go very, very poorly. Mm-hmm. What would be the goal of joint strikes against Iran? Are we talking regime change? Because you'll have to forgive me, I'm out on that. It never seems to work out, even though I hate the Ayatollahs as much as anyone else. That never works for us. What would be the goal of it?
Well, I mean, the goal is to eliminate the Iranian nuclear program, and these are in specific sites. They have a pretty good idea where everything is. And look, Jesse, I mean, this ruling regime is very weak, and just because a regime falls doesn't mean that the United States is responsible for picking up the pieces. So what the Bush administration, George W. Bush, wanted to do in Iraq and Afghanistan is very different from the fact that, you know, brittle regimes fall. And some of the times U.S. actions, though not intentionally, will nonetheless bring them down. I mean, let's talk about the tariff regime right now. Right. I mean, what the United States, what Donald Trump wanted in his first term and what Donald Trump wants now from the Chinese are no more currency manipulation, right? No more theft of U.S. intellectual property, no more forced technology transfers from American companies, even at the trade deficit. Now, what are these? These are vital for the survival of the Chinese Communist Party. And if Trump says, nope, sorry, unless you're going to do that, we don't have a deal, and we're going to keep the tariffs on you, and we don't care how much pain it puts on you. What happens if that brittle regime What happens if that brittle regime breaks? And again, the fact that they will not make a deal over this, the Chinese didn't make a deal during Trump's first term over this. What if they don't do it over the second, during the second term as well? So there's a lot of brittle regimes around the world that the United States deals with, and it's not as if the United States has to be responsible for picking up the pieces of the Chinese Communist Party, an adversarial regime that has hounded Americans for the last half century plus.
No doubt. It's been, gosh, it's been 70 years. Well, speaking of hostile regimes, let's switch gears and go to Ukraine, Russia. We now have a story out. Ryan Routh, the would-be Trump assassin numero dos, he was apparently out there trying to buy rocket launchers. And look, Lee, I don't want to run with internet rumors, but some very reliable people are out there talking about how this guy was able to get people papers as he was recruiting for the Ukrainian military. At the same time, he's on a golf course ready to blow Donald Trump's head off. Lee, this thing looks ugly.
Well, I'm hopeful that the new leadership at the FBI are friends, people that we admire and respect a tremendous amount. We hope that the Kash Patel, Dan Bongino, director and deputy director, we certainly hope that they get to the bottom of this and find out what was going on. And we still want to know exactly. We want some more details. We want the details on what happened at Butler, yeah, Pennsylvania, and why this entire episode was buried almost immediately. We understand about ongoing investigations, but you know, we'd still like to have some sort of sense of what's going on here. And so this is another story, the Ryan Routh story, something else we need to know more about.
Yeah, it would actually be nice to know some details about the fact that the president was shot in the head and someone almost killed him on the golf course, and we don't know Bubkis at this point in time. Lee, thank you, my friend, as always. Appreciate it. Lighten the mood. Next. All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And let me just say really quickly before we get to J.D. Vance and his mother that I know a lot of people struggle with addiction, addictions of various things. Addiction is one of these things that plagues human beings. It just does. And maybe you have struggled, maybe you are struggling with it, whatever it is, drugs, alcohol, I don't know, whatever it is. I'm not your priest. You don't have to tell me. But I just want to encourage you that you can keep struggling and win eventually. It feels insurmountable at times. I know it does. Feels like you'll never get out of it. You can get out of it. J.D. Vance's mother is actually a wonderful example of this. Remember when he said this at the RNC?
And I'm proud to say that tonight my mom is here. 10 years clean and sober. I love you, Mom. And you know, Mom, I was thinking, it'll be 10 years officially in January of 2025. And if President Trump's okay with it, let's have the celebration in the White House.
Turns out, President Trump was okay with it. And J.D. Vance made good on the promise to his mother, celebrating her and her 10 years of sobriety at the White House. It's pretty cool, and let it serve as an inspiration to you. You don't have to be the mother of the vice president to overcome. Just keep struggling. Even if you fail today, if you're struggling, you're winning. You'll get there. All right? See you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.